Hi guys, welcome back to the TM Ball podcast. I'm with two guests today, Dan and Dan Z. How are we guys? You well?
All good, man, all good.
Yeah, good, thank you, buddy.
Okay, this can get very confusing, so it will be Dan and Dan Z, just to confirm. Just a bit of background on Dan. He is a residential West Ham supporter. How do you feel that your season's going so far?
Oh, you gotta love it, ain't you, mate? Especially with our past couple of seasons, but Moyes is doing bits at the moment. We're loving life.
Other people, I've heard many of our fans actually think you're a scumbag. How do you feel about that?
What, me personally or West Ham?
Both, mainly you. We've had many reports saying get him off the podcast. It's crazy because you haven't ever been on. How do you feel about that?
Is this person actually you, by any chance? You've been commenting on your own posts.
Slander. That is slander, sir, and I will sue. So it's crazy because what's the film where they actually switch bodies?
Switch bodies?
Yeah, so they switch mind and bodies. There's loads of films like it where they're like
Freaky Friday.
Freaky Friday.
That's what happened, it would appear, to West Ham and Tottenham at the moment.
technically we do play kind of similar roles, but at the moment no one seems to want to play football for Tottenham. You take Kane out of the squad and everyone's just like, oh, what the hell do we do now?
Did you just see the penalty that was given away?
I saw Dier like scissor kick like Werner like three times, yeah.
Yeah, it was just let people know. It is currently the 4th of February 2021, just so people know. Eric Dier is pretending to do Cobra Kai on the field. Not very successfully. And it looks atrocious. I mean, it's going to be the first time since AVB has been in charge. It looks like we're going to lose three in a bounce. I mean, do you reckon Mourinho should be in or out DC?
In, I think.
In? I mean, yeah. At what point do you say, you know, we've had enough?
I don't know. Like I was saying yesterday, I think you just got to wait to the end of the season until you make decisions. But, yeah. I say it's keep them in until you've got the full picture, because everything's changing so quickly at the minute.
So Dan,
yes,
how do you feel? I mean, if you've listened to the other podcasts, you'll strongly hear my opinions on Antonio. do you think he should be given that England cap?
Yes. I mean, I know it's easy to say as a West Ham fan, but as an England fan as well, it kind of gives you that wild card aspect. Like, the game is literally, I don't know, you're struggling to get Kane involved, you're trying to get any striker involved, you're struggling to kind of punish that defence. He bullies a defence, like, he's kind of like, yeah, like I say, he's your wild card. Defenders don't really know what to do with him. But he is injury prone. He is getting on a bit. So as a West Ham fan, I'd rather him stay away from the England squad. But I'd understand why he'd get a call up, because in a way, he deserves it.
Exactly, 100%. Now, whilst we've got you on here, we might as well talk, especially for American listeners, South African and Filipino, randomly. Can you explain about your owners and what they have done to your club since taking over?
Oh, where do we start? This could take up about half hour.
It's all right, we've got an hour. Okay.
So basically, they came from a club in Birmingham called Birmingham. We'd had plenty of owners beforehand. None of them really worked out. And then we supposedly had these two guys who ran Birmingham, who are West Ham fans.
Names?
Unfortunately, say again, man.
What's their names, just for content?
David Gold and David Sullivan.
Thank you.
Yeah, so to have a board with West Ham fans as your board, things are looking well for you. You think, anyway. Unfortunately, in the first.
Conference? I think that's a big point, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember if it was the first or second season we went down. And I can't quite remember if they were the ones who appointed Avram Grant, But that's probably one of our worst seasons of all time.
The statement I meant, when they first come to the club, they was making promises left, right and centre, right?
Yeah, I mean, not straight away. I think it was around, like, maybe when the Olympic Stadium got announced, when we got 2012. That's when, from a West Ham fan point of view, it looked like they had their dreams set out, but they obviously saw money opportunities.
Didn't they come out and say basically that they're looking to go for that Champions League spot, at which point you absolutely was in hysterics, I believe.
Yeah, so the whole plan was, the whole ideology was that if we move to a 60,000, 70,000 seat stadium, that's going to attract the players that will get us to Champions League football. So as a club and as a fan who just in 2004 we went down, in 2010 we went down, so off like near enough in the space of 5 years we've been relegated twice, having that come from your board, you're getting excited. But unfortunately we have rose tinted glasses, or claret and blue tinted glasses. We're not realising that actually we're saying goodbye to Upton Park, which was our old stadium. So we're kind of, you're kind of forgetting that, yeah, we might be pushing on to bigger and better things, but we're losing our identity. There are a lot of businesses that would have gone under, well, have gone under, who basically stayed open because of match days. So there's lots of little things that I don't think West Ham fans really knew was going to happen. They just were told, yo, we're going to be in the Champions League in 5 years, 10 years. So we were just like, oh, happy days. But unfortunately, things didn't work out as we hoped.
Relegation, as you've just stated, in the first instance. And also, as you just said, what happened as well, once they promised all this in the relegation, they also got the Olympic Stadium. I mean, that's a whole different matter. There was ourselves, Tottenham, going for that, and then West Ham. But West Ham decided to keep the track around the pitch. Now, you're a season ticket holder there. What is the atmosphere like? Does it feel like home?
No, it doesn't. It's not felt like home since we've moved there. There's loads of different aspects as to why not. On the subject of atmosphere, I don't think performances have helped that much. I didn't go to the game, but I remember my dad saying that there was a game, I can't remember what year it was, but we played Chelsea and we beat them 2-1. And that was kind of the first kind of massively positive thing to happen in that stadium. And apparently the whole ground was buzzing, sorry. So the whole ground was...
bumming, that's what you just said.
The whole ground was bumming. We were that happy, we changed our sexualities. But no, bouncing was what I meant. So, yeah, I think in most stadiums, when you're playing badly, the atmosphere is not going to be that good. In a sense, actually, I've changed my mind on that. I think there's always, in normal stadiums, no matter if you're performing good or bad, there's going to be an atmosphere. What a lot of people noticed was, obviously, with the extra capacity, you're going to be bringing in newer fans. So people were getting put who were originally in the Bobby Moore lower, which was like probably the most atmosphere in Upton Park. We're being put in stands that had families and stuff.
That's never a good idea, is it?
Yeah. So you had groups of people who wanted to sing, wanted to stand up next to people who wanted just to sit down and enjoy a nice quiet game of football.
Stop it, Barry. Margaret's enjoying it with little Jimmy here. You know,
it was quite funny. We were originally put in what's now the Billy Bond's upper when we first joined, and my dad and his mate just refused to sit down for the start of it. So you could literally, like, the entire stand is sitting down, bar these two people standing up, where they stood at Upton Park. Everyone stood up, and people who did want to stand up wanted to continue it, but unfortunately, being put in around surrounded by families and stuff, you're not going to get that atmosphere. So with the London Stadium now, you've got parts of the stadium that have good atmosphere, but it's not the majority of the stadium. So, but in regards to the track, that's a whole different side of it. Depending where you are in the stadium. Like, I know from people telling me that away fans, their view in the upper tier particularly is awful. But where my dad sits now and where I go, when I go, we sit quite close to the front behind the goal. So the view is pretty good. But the further you get back on the goal sides, apparently the view is a bit crap.
How do you feel, DC, about West Ham? I mean, can you remember when they did all the protests as well? As a third party, I mean, how do you view West Ham?
I feel sorry for them, mate. Upton Park, whenever you think of Upton Park, as a, well, as you say it, from the outside, you feel going to West Ham at home is a difficult game. And it's crazy because you think now when you go to West Ham, well, probably not on current form now, but when they first moved into the stadium, you feel there's a bit of vulnerability inside because the crowds struggle to create that same, replicate that same atmosphere as in Upton Park. You know, we're very fortunate out down here at QPR where we still got one of them old school fashion grounds. It can only hold 18,000, but it feels like 100,000 because everyone's so close to the pitch. You know, it's just about what, a meter to the touchline in some of the sides. So you're right there. You're right on top of the ground. You can, you know, shout in players' ears. You can hurl abuse. You can do whatever you want. And you know, you feel, I don't know, I've never been to the Olympic Stadium to watch a match, but it probably, you know, it's a long way away from the atmosphere. There are two atmospheres that are so far apart. And I feel, you know, there was obviously optimism with the whole stadium move for West Ham. But then, you know, maybe the people that missed out, like your Spurs and different clubs, maybe it's a blessing in disguise because now, you know, the atmosphere, I think atmosphere topples the aesthetics of it and the looks of it all, but you know, money talks, so something you can do about
it. I mean, it was more than just the stadium that was the downfall of that season. We just spent, like, I know we West Ham fans go on about Golden Sullivan, how we'd want them to, we want them out, but to be fair to them, they did pump in a lot of money when we first moved there, maybe especially with Pellegrini, but when we first moved, I think we spent about maybe 100 odd million. But they were just players no one really heard of. Coming to light now, we've learned that at West Ham there's not a single scout. Apparently, it's been going on for quite a while. You're hearing, like, especially Sam Allardyce's autobiography, was one of our previous managers. He'd say that he'd turn up to the training ground, and a new player would just show up without knowledge. So that's not the way to run a club. So like, our chairman would be a scout himself. So this is a businessman going out to find players. That's not how a club should be run. So I don't know how it worked with Slaven Bilic, who was the manager when we went to the Olympic Stadium. I don't know how he had the final say on all these players, but we had stuff. It's been that long. I can't remember who joined, but I know for one was Simone Zaza, probably one of the worst strikers we'd ever bought. The only goal he scored at the London Stadium was against us when we hosted Juventus. Apart from that, Simone Zaza never scored a goal for us. But it was just players like that. It seems like we were buying players that were there just for the paycheck. There was no kind of... You saw that the heart of the squad has already started to diminish.
Now, we've talked about the current state and the owners, and just quickly, let's get into your first memory of being a fan, both of you, you know. Now, DC, what's the first time you can remember you falling in love with your team?
You know what? It was probably when I first went to my first game. I can't remember much of it. I just can remember.
Was that a QPR?
Yeah, man. It was a dross of a game. It was raining, pouring down with rain, but it was nil, and it finished 0-0. But I just can remember it just being in the stands. We didn't have any covers over our heads, so it was just that, like, just getting drenched in all of this rain. But it was my first experience, you know. It's my first experience. Me and my granddad just go into a game, and we made it a tradition that when we go, we have burgers. If we win, if we don't, we don't have any burgers. You know, just that. So a lot of journeys.
You must be starving.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. A lot of journeys back without no burgers, but. No, it was that was my first memory of loving football, was actually going to see football live, and it all took off from there.
Yeah,
you know? I was quite young.
How fat would you be if you were Premier League champions?
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Wouldn't be here, mate.
All the burgers.
Yeah, all the burgers. Anyway, that's my earliest memory of football, and then it just took off from there. Also, Game Boy Advance 2005 FIFA.
I didn't even know FIFA came on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah,
exactly. I remember on Game Boy they had an attachment for a light on it.
Really?
It was possibly the worst attachment you've ever seen. It shone on the screen and everything. Jesus. That's how old I am. Question to you, Arden. Sure. What was your first memory or made you fall in love with the game?
My first memory, and I think it was my first game. It was against Oldham, I think. And if I remember rightly, we lost. But
of course.
But I remember my dad took me. We were sat in the Bobby Moore lower, and I had to stand the missy, surrounded by all these singing West Ham fans. It was a bit intimidating. But yeah, that was my first memory. But the memory that makes me fall in love with West Ham was, there was a game where we played, it was Chelsea, and it was 0-0 throughout the entire game, and Di Canio had just come back after a spell from injury, and there was rumours that he would be leaving the club, and there was this, it was towards the end of the game, ball was crossed in and Di Canio tapped it in for the winner, and the feeling I got from that was just amazing. And from that point on, it was just falling in love with the game. Like, it's about not just West Ham, it was just about them moments where all hope seems lost, and then bang, one moment, pure joy.
I think that describes actually West Ham in a T. Absolutely. And it's such a weird feeling, because whilst you want your owners out, they're performing amazing. I don't know if that's Moyes or the team, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
This is a manager who come in and says all he does is win, and everyone laughed in his face, and he's now proven us wrong, which is horrendous, you know.
I mean,
it's crazy.
I wouldn't say proven us wrong. I still...
Typical West Ham fan, can't take any praise. Yeah.
No. hear me out. I still think it was stupid of him to say that, because he has done some weird stuff to lose us games.
Yeah, yes.
But no, yeah. The way the team's performing, I mean, you've got to give him all the credit. Like, obviously,
The chemistry is amazing, right?
But a lot of West Ham, majority of West Ham fans were like, why the hell are we getting Moyes back? And he's made us eat our words, really.
West Ham fans, everybody thought that.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he take control of Sunderland as well? And he got sacked from there as well. He's done amazing to come back, you know. Now, quickly, let's just talk about the bottom three. Who's going down?
It's a tough one, because if you look at Brighton's result last night, it's just like...
I think they're clear.
They're going to be clear, but things change in the Prem. Like, Burnley are always down there, but they always survive. Sheffield are finding some form a bit. I think West Brom, yeah, I'd say West Brom are definitely going down. I don't think Allardyce can save that squad.
Well, he's never been relegated, has he?
He's never been relegated, but he also hasn't really gotten performing just yet. I mean... They could, to be fair to them, they could have got a result against us. But
saying that, though, he still might not get relegated and get sacked before it's all over.
Yeah, he'll resign in the last game just to make sure.
Yeah. The most Sam Allardyce thing ever. Now, just for our other listeners who are unaware, Sam Allardyce was the England manager for one game he's a classy man. He decided to get a pint of wine and also told journalists how to go around third party player ownerships to get more money from them. Very nice man. I've got nothing but positive things to say about him. More positive than HIV. That's how positive I am.
But is he only England manager with 100% record?
Exactly. Now, I haven't discussed this on the podcast yet, guys, but England chances, Euros. Do you think we've actually got a chance? We'll start with you, DC.
You just never know, isn't it? That's the whole beauty of a knockout competition, is that you just don't know who's going to win. It's not based on form. It's not necessarily based on, you know, how talented the squad are. But they just set you up for failure, don't they, England? In recent years, anyway. And there's such pressure that the nation puts on these English players to do well, that I feel obviously in recent years that pressure has died down a bit. You know, Southgate's really pushed the media to stop pressuring and us as fans to stop pressuring these youngsters, and says that it is going to take time. You know, coming out and saying, oh, we're not going to win the World Cup in 2018, we're not going to do all of this, and then suddenly, do you know what, we perform better than we've done in many, many years, you know, getting to that semi-final. So I feel it will happen, but I don't see it happening anytime in the near future. You've got to give them time.
Do you think it'll happen in this generation?
It's hard to say. You have got to look at what the other countries are doing as well, and I think a good area to look at is obviously our European competitions, and to see how well the players from those sides are doing, and to match them together, because that's the only comparison you can really make. Friendlies is pointless. The Nations League is pointless. It generates some competition, but not enough to the standard where, you know, you see the Champions League, for example. So it's a hard one, but I think that's the beauty of it, is not knowing, and for it to be all open and to see who comes out on top. But they'll be right up there. But yeah, I don't think we're there yet.
Dan, do you think we'll win it in the next 20 years?
I don't know about 20 years. Possibly. But as long as Southgate's manager, we won't win anything. That's my...
Who would you like to see take over?
It's just who's out there. I mean, do you give Lampard the job? I mean...
No. Okay, next.
Then. No, it's a weird one. Like, when Chris Wilder was doing bits with Sheffield United, I said maybe he'd be a good manager, but...
Eddie Howe.
They're just
Rafa.
There's no kind of names, English names, to be fair, out there. Who
you not want the Spanish waiter?
Rafa.
Yeah, I think he'd be great there. You know,
manage England, and fair enough. But nah, it's just Southgate frustrates me. Like, everyone's saying that in the World Cup, how we did well to get to the semi-finals, but be fair, we had an easy route to the semi-finals. I can't remember if we finished first or second in our group, but whatever it was, if we went the other way, we definitely would not have made it to the semi-finals. But I'm not saying that what he accomplished, like, you can only play what's put in front of you, but what he accomplished getting to the semi-finals was amazing. But we definitely could have got to the final. I think he definitely bottled it against Croatia.
100%.
I don't think that was his fault. The players have got to score the goals, right? Sterling, Kane, you remember that moment? That goes in, everything changes.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's all ifs and buts, unfortunately, now.
No, that's been it. England's sport, isn't it? It's exactly. All ifs and buts.
Southgate, how he sets up the team at the moment. When you've got Kane, who's like one of the most informed false nines out there at the moment, and you pay him as a number, have you paid him as a proper number nine? It's just you have to question it, how we keep playing three at the back when there's different defensive options in the Premier League who are much more better on form than Harry Maguire. Playing Kyle Walker as the centre half, it's frustrating. Playing Declan Rice and Jordan Henderson together, I could go on for hours about Southgate's stupidity. But
Dan, sorry to come across you, but being devil's advocate here. What's your current FIFA team like in regards to Kyle Walker?
Look, if, we're starting to say that Cole, players on FIFA representing their real life, then no, we're not. I'm not bumming EA right now.
Sorry. The context, ladies and gentlemen, is that Dan actually plays Kyle Walker at centre back, and then he goes to and he goes to make comments on Southgate. Anyway, sorry, Dan.
But the thing is, I can get Kyle Walker to play well as centre half in my team.
Dan, for England manager, it would appear.
That's it. We've answered the question. Who should be next England manager? Dan Harden.
FA. I'll put my CV in tomorrow morning.
Well, you say that. This is the Southgate who put Walker at centre back, like Dan, anyway. So I don't really see what else we're getting. We're already doing that. Trippier. Left back, and it's just meant. I mean, we have four really good right backs. We have Trent, Wan-Bissaka, Walker, and Trippier, and it seems that he tries to fit all of them in the same team. It's crazy.
It's the way he's set up, like especially with Alexander Arnold, like he's doing bits for Liverpool, but he's another player that Southgate doesn't know how to use. He's more defensive, like.
He's having a terrible season.
Yeah, but players have these on-off seasons. Like I say, form class is permanent, though. But he's more, like I said, he's more of the attacking wing-back. He's not your defensive full-back, which is the way Southgate really sets up at the moment. So, yeah, you're not seeing the most out of him. So it's just, you got to be a manager that knows how to get the best out of your best players. And Southgate doesn't.
Now, how do you think that the Premier League is going to survive COVID? Do you think players' fees will go down, or do you think we'll still see the £100 million go out?
It's hard to say. I hope so, but just like everything, it will recover. We've seen with the last transfer window that's just gone in January, expecting the Prem, West Ham were the highest spenders with £25 million. Getting Benrahma in, just below them were United with Diallo, or how we pronounce his name, they've just brought in.
Yeah.
So you can see that COVID's having the effect. But is it the price range is coming down, or clubs are just saving their money just so when everything returns normal, we'll go back to spending big? I just don't know. I mean, we'll have to wait and see.
Now, Cecile, DC.
Yeah.
Would you take a cup win, or would you be happy for QPR just to get back in the Prem?
Back in the Prem, mate. Seeing your team play week in, week out in the Premier League, I'd take that over a trophy. But saying that, I wouldn't want to go up just to go back down again. That wouldn't be the goal. So if you gave me the question again and said staying in the Premier League or being promoted to the Premier League and then being stable, then 100%. I still go with the Premier League, playing against the best teams in the world on multiple occasions rather than the one cup win on one occasion. Do you know what we would do then? We'd go out via the playoffs, get the cup at Wembley, have that experience. So you still won the cup and you're promoted as well. That would be the goal.
That's probably one of my favourite memories of West Ham. Like, as much as like being secure in first and second for promotion, but you cannot beat promotion day at Wembley. I mean, I've seen it on both sides. I went to Wembley and saw West Ham promoted, and then I went to Cecile's favourite day of QPR in Derby, and I sat with the Derby lot, so I experienced the other side of not getting promoted. So, but yes, first and gone.
Now, on a totally different note, we'll try to make it a bit different now. So, you have got, I think we've got four or five Champions League winner managers in the current Premier League. Now, do we actually think Ancelotti will do anything at Everton, or can you see him getting sacked soon? Now, well, we've had this discussion before, thinking, well, where do Everton actually see themselves? I do believe they see themselves a lot higher than they currently are. And I don't know what they're planning, but I think he will be let go. Everton fans are very unhappy But what do you guys think? Do you say we got Ancelotti? Do you think they're right? Because he has spent a lot of money.
He has spent a lot of money, but who else are you going to get in? That's the question, mate. How many managers out there are better than Ancelotti and what he can provide and what he's done in the game and the experience that he has? Not many at the moment.
Allegri. They've got that much money, they can literally bring any manager in. I mean, they got Ancelotti in the first place.
Wouldn't you
place,
think it'd be risky if they brought someone in who hasn't got Premier League experience rather than Ancelotti who has and has won it?
I do. If he's not doing well as it is, I think like they've got nothing else to risk. They really, really want to push on, and if they're just floundering around the same position than us, what do you think, Arden? Are you with me or are you with the person who drunk Cecile?
I think we're in a time of period where if you're struggling as a manager for a couple of games and your head's immediately called for, you're not going to have the best, you're not going to have the perfect season straight away. It's all about building. I mean, if we look at United, for example, I still don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is that good of a manager. He's just got amazing players around him.
100% agree with
it's
you.
It's proven that United had a terrible start to the season, but he's been given time. He could have easily been sacked, but he's been given time to shake the egos, to get them playing again, and look where they are now. So it's kind of polar opposite to Everton. They started off amazingly and they've kind of gone down the table a bit, but these things unfortunately happen. It's a strange time in football. I know he's brought in some players. There's still some players in that squad, definitely, that need to be replaced in Everton. Like Richarlison, I've never rated. Dominic Calvert-Lewin had a great start to the season. He's sort of gone quite a bit. I still think he's a fantastic prospect, though. I don't know how old he is. He's still quite young, I think.
He is.
I think Everton fans have just like they got their Champions League, Premier League winning manager in and expected big things straight away. And as a West Ham fan who has also not to that extent. Well, we have Pellegrini come in, obviously a Premier League winning manager. But these things unfortunately take time. But as we saw with Pellegrini, he definitely was no longer up to the challenge because of his age. And as I've always said to you, Jay, you can't build a project with a manager that old.
I feel like you've got that scene from someone before, but yeah, no, you are right. You can't build a project with someone who is old. We talked about that with Pellegrini. It's crazy to actually do that. You know, it makes no sense doing...
But then again, David Moyes isn't the youngest manager, and the project they're building with him is working. So it works both ways. But you've got to give the manager time.
That's because
you've got to give the manager
told,
time.
Yeah. David Moyes is actually 40. He just drinks baby blood or something. He just stays young forever. He looks crazy. But I'm looking at the Chelsea team currently, who are absolutely, even though it's 1-0, they're playing very, very attacking, exciting football. How do you think he'll do?
I don't know. It's a weird one. Like, I don't follow French football, but I know... For him to get sacked. He got PSG to the Champions, but it still comes back to managers not getting the time anymore. But he got them Champions League final. Obviously, there were reasons why he got sacked, which I don't really know. But he's getting them playing, which is the main thing. But at the same time, I think Chelsea fans need to realise that you're not going to win the Premier League this year. You're going to get Champions League. You don't know. But it's just about, you've got to give the manager time. He's not at a transfer window. This isn't his team. This is Lampard's team. So he's just got to get him playing and just hopefully get him a European spot. You can't be judged.
I think that is the massive difference in regarding of that, because Lampard wanted more players, and with the board of how much money they have spent on this team, he will, like he did at PSG at Thomas Tuchel, he'll get the best out of the players he's currently got. unlike the Mourinho who'll want his own players, etc. I think he'll do great. I really do. What do you think, DC? Do you think Tuchel will be a success or do you think he'll flop?
Well, on recent games, you can say he's doing well already and he's got that manager bounce. So if he continues this, then yeah, he will be a success. But it seems to be that he's playing, he's very defensive. You see Chelsea kept, I can't remember what was their first game.
Oh my God. Werner's just missed the biggest 6-yard shot ever. Sorry, go on.
Jay just choked on food.
Yeah.
I choked more than Werner did.
I don't think any manager is going to get Werner's shooting ability back to it, what it was. I think that's just...
Don't say that, mate. I need these informs. Yeah. Right. Back to my point. On recent games, I think his first game was a 0-0. And then his second game, he won 2-0. So he's keeping clean sheets. Don't know what the score is. Is it still 1-0? I've not seen the score.
1-0, yeah.
So he looks like he's got a defensive presence in there. Maybe that's something that Chelsea were lacking.
He has lost Thiago Silva in the first half, though. So that's a massive blow.
I mean, the guy is getting on as well, but he's just such a good player. We've talked about this before regarding sports science and how much it's improved in recent times. And you're getting players like Sergio Ramos, especially in Spain, and Ronaldo and Messi, and they can start. And you're getting players who are playing onto late 30s to early 40s now because the medical equipment's so much better and the research and science are, no matter what, you know, they can keep going at a high standard. Now, that's good, but also it will affect the youngsters. I mean, whilst we're discussing this also, I'm going to ask you both. I'll start with you, DC. Give me your top four that you think will happen. I mean, do you think Liverpool will fall out the top four?
Depends if they put their eggs in one basket and just go for Champions League. That's tough. That is really tough, you know. I can see Villa or one of those teams sneaking into it, you know.
How dare you?
West Ham, Villa.
That's more like it.
Leicester. I can see something crazy happening this season. I don't know. A dark horse getting that fourth spot. I'll go for United, City, Leicester and West Ham. There you go. Let's go rogue. Let's go different.
Love that, Cecil. I love that.
We lost Jay. Is he still here?
No, I'm listening. Please, Mr. Harden, give me your top four. Or
I'm going to be more realistic. I don't think we'll get top four. I reckon City, unless things drastically change, I've got the Prem. I reckon City, Leicester. I reckon United will stay up there. And Liverpool.
Now, I'll start with you, Harden. Liverpool, tower hopes, have they gone?
Say again, sorry?
Tower hopes for Liverpool, are they done?
It's a strange one. Probably this season, yeah. I think the injuries just haven't really helped them.
Do you think Klopp's run his course? Because I know it's crazy for us to say that, right? However, there are fans out there who want Klopp to leave, which is mental.
I don't think he's run his course at all. I mean, he's still got that chemistry throughout the side. You can see how much every single player loves him. I mean, they've just won the Prem, for God's sake. He's won the Champions League. You're not. It's so hard whenever, especially this season, to get the main consistent. And what he's still doing, the amount of players he's lost and continue to lose. Like, for God's sake, he's not got a really recognised defender playing at the moment, and he's still. Well, I know they lost to Brighton, but they're still winning games. They beat us. I mean, it's not hard to beat West Ham when they don't do anything. But when Mane's out, when Firmino's on the bench, when Van Dijk's injured, Matip's injured, and you're still bossing the game, that's just showing you, like, there's that belief still in a squad. And I think a lot of fans, particularly, who have been so used to success, I know Liverpool have only got recent success on the Premier League level, but it's just hard to see the little things in management, other than winning consistently. And you're seeing that with City fans particularly.
Of course. Now, whilst we're talking about this, guys, and we're just about to go on the next subject, I just want to say a huge thank you. I mean, we're getting so much support on it already. Like I say, we've got America, we've got a lot of the UK, but the current donations we're getting, we've got Emily Coates, Craig Schmitz, Darius, Alice, and Will, you know, all thrown in to help us get on YouTube. I mean, I just want to say thank you. Do you want to say anything to the fans, guys, before we move on to the next subject?
Well, just thanks for listening to me. This is my first one, but whoever's listening, thanks for listening, and hopefully I don't bore you too much.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it is Mr. Dan's first podcast, but he will be our resident West Ham fan, I'm afraid. You know, it's such great to have a West Ham fan on here, due to the fact of they are literally the Emmerdale of the Premier League. You will see them go up top, bottom, there'll be plane crashes, there'll be car crashes, you'll fall in love, you'll fall out of love. It's such a unique club, and I believe they're one of the most supported club, not only just in the Prem, but in the world. I mean, can you describe what it's like being a fan of West Ham, Dan?
Inconsistent.
It's literally about being in a relationship, right?
Inconsistent's the word. But yeah, you are right. That's the good thing about being a West Ham fan, though. Like, you say that, oh, you're going to support City, you're going to support these big clubs so you can see us winning every week. But as much as that's amazing, but we don't, every season's different. So that's one of the main things about West Ham. Like, yeah, heartbreak will happen, but that's part of football, unfortunately. And it's just, yeah, it makes you a better supporter and makes you more understand football a lot better.
It's just absolutely amazing. It really is. I mean, whilst we're talking about this, we'll go into UDC as well, because we're very focusing on the Premier League tonight. What we'll do another night is I wish to discuss our best World 11. We're doing the Premier League best of all time tomorrow on the podcast with Will and Damien. But will you two join me this weekend in discussing? We'll get Fletch on here as well. Of your all-time World
that
11.
That will be a lot of opinions, but yes, let's do it.
Yeah.
We've got a good hour to do it. We'll do a 4-4-2. That's the standard. You're allowed one goalkeeper, two defenders, two midfielders, and another striker on your bench. And when they're on the bench, they've got bench mentalities. Like I say, Teddy Sheringham as a striker is of all time, you know, so they've got to be good off the bench as well, guys. That should be really exciting as well. Now, whilst we were discussing this about West Ham earlier, can you give me your favourite cup moments for being West Ham? Personally, I don't know if you've got a different one, but it's got to be the Di Canio versus Barthez. When he asked, hey, guys, if you're watching this and you're not really a big football fan, please Google it. That Dan will tell you there's something used to be called the Barthez dance. And that is because he just stands there like a nutty holding his hands.
I remember going to I think it was my first ever Old Trafford visit, and unfortunately we lost 6-0 that day. But I remember at half-time, all the West Ham fans started putting their hands... when the second half started, all the West Ham fans started putting their hands up in the air. And I had no idea what was happening. And then my dad showed me the footage of what they were doing. And yeah, it's probably one of the funniest clips from a football match.
It's got to be my favourite West Ham Cup moment. Oh, I mean, have you got any others that you can think of?
Positive or just funny?
Both. Whatever you deem to be acceptable.
Well, QPR
have you got any
moments,
DC?
We could barely get out of the fourth round. Third round, sorry.
No, we're a proper team. West Ham, have you got any?
Favourite moments? I mean, I've been to two playoffs. Are we counting playoff as the cup or just FA Cup?
Whatever you...
FA League Cup, I was thinking.
But one of my favourite moments is kind of in recent history. When I went to uni, I used to live with a Liverpool fan, and we had them in the cup. It was at Upton Park, and we went to extra time, and it was about to go to penalties. And Dimitri Payet whipped a ball in, Ogbonna headed it in the net for us to win 2-1, I think it was. And to live with a Liverpool fan, who, and everyone knows what Liverpool fans are like. And to see that goal go in, it's one of the happiest moments of my life. it's so many moments. The cup's a weird one because there's some moments in it that are amazing, but you tend to forget about them because it is the cup. But yeah, to put on the spot, they probably have to be that one. But I wasn't there. But the Canio versus Barthez has got to be one of the greatest West Ham cup moments.
DC, can you think of any, to take QPR out of it, what are your favourite cup highlights that you
do
can
anything,
think?
Do you know what? Do you anything that can come to mind? What was that really scummy goal that, well, it was scummy, but it was like that one last minute injury time, extra time goal. Was it Wigan against Arsenal or something like that?
Birmingham Arsenal, yeah.
Something like that.
didn't the keeper smash it against Koscielny's back or something?
Something like that. And it was just like, that's the only one that can come into my head. I was like, oh my days. So, yeah. Nah, something like that. Just like one of them. Oh, do you know what? At Portsmouth as well. You know, this. Everyone loves an underdog, right? So anytime an underdog wins a cup, scenes.
The most recent one was Wigan, wasn't it? They beat City and they won the FA Cup, but also got relegated that season. So stuff like that.
It's really amazing. I mean, if you guys can remember when City first come up as well, and then when they got that takeover, I'll never forget the Aguero finish.
Oh, what, the Premier League one, 2012.
Now that's got. Yeah, that's got to be one of the most
magical moments
ever.
Now,
yeah, QPR.
Now, if you got time, mate, I can tell you a little story about that. So,
we've got 15 minutes.
Funny, because since that day, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about that game and what happened. I don't know if you remember the context of it, but we were down to 10 men for 30 minutes of that game. Joey Barton decided to have a little ding dong with Tevez at the time. Yeah, just a little, you know, handbags, that kind of thing. Well, you're not allowed to say handbags now, apparently. But
boot to the back of the leg.
Yeah, so they had a little exchange before that, and then Barton thought it'd be funny to just give him a little that tap, and then more than that, and then an elbow. And then it was caught, and then he got sent off. Then he tried what he mentioned in another podcast, a QPR podcast, is that he did it on purpose. He needed Aguero to try and get another man to go with him. And that's what he claims. Again, this is like one man's word against another man's word. So, but he claims that he tried to get another man because obviously it was a big game for the club. We had to get something from that game to survive if results weren't going our way. So he was like, do you know what? I'm going to try and get another player off. To make it 10-10. So that's what he did. He tried to go for Aguero, then tried to have it out with company. Then obviously walked down the tunnel trying to get Balotelli involved as well. It just didn't work out for him, and he got that 12-game ban that he had to play out in Marseille the following season. So it's crazy, man. We were just surviving for our life. And then after that, we take the lead. So we're 1-0 up against City. And then, was it 1-0? No. We were 2-1 up.
2-1, wasn't it?
Yes. We went 2-1 up against City after falling behind. And then, you know, two goals in the last few minutes. You just couldn't make it up. And then we didn't realise that we were safe at the time because results decided to go our way. So the players were playing for their lives in the Premier League when that goal went in. You know, they weren't, people were saying, oh no, QPR, you only scored that goal because they found out they were safe. No, they didn't. None of the players knew. It was only a few seconds after that Aguero goal went in that the bench was signaling, no, we're safe, we're good. They didn't tell the players that before. So it's...
Must be a bizarre thing to be on the other side of one of the greatest Premier League moments of all time.
Yeah, but then once they found out that they were safe, everyone was celebrating. It's weird. It's also weird to come out of a football match knowing both sides are happy. You know, it's a very weird feeling, but you had, you know, you had both of the owners hugging each other at the end, saying, you know, what a crazy season it was. But yeah, there's just a bit of context to that game that we probably, some of the listeners probably haven't heard of before. But yeah, Joey Barton, what a guy. Sacked now as well from Fleetwood.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, has he been sacked?
It's that was very weird. I mean, he had a very up and down time there. So I know we've got about 10 to 15 minutes left. So I'm going to ask a controversial subject now. Do you think...
Yay.
I'll start with you first, Arden. Yeah, I know. You're going to love it because I know DC's going to have a lot to say about this. Do you think there is a prejudice against ethnic and minority managers? So do you think it's harder to be black or a different ethnicity and get a Premier League job?
The thing that you answer is probably, yeah. I mean, the evidence is there, really. I can't remember the guy's name. Who was the West Brom manager? Was it Darren Moore?
That's the one.
Yes. So,
yep.
I might be just...
Yep.
I think that, at the most, the only...
Well, I believe he did great in that position as well.
But to be honest, in recent history, correct me, because my mind might just be having a moment, but... He's the kind of only black manager that I can only remember in my head right now.
Rude Gullit?
Okay, in recent.
Rude Gullit, even.
Recent.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, but the evidence is there. But, you don't really know how to answer it because there's no kind of like evidence to say they're not being hired because of it. But they seem to be more in coaching roles.
Well,
as opposed to
Like Ledley King, for instance. And I mean, you look at the amount of players; it's like 70-80% players of different, you know, ethnicities, and yet the 20% seem to be in all imagined roles that are white dominated. It just seems crazy to me. What do you think, DC? Do you think there is racism with Germans?
Take employing? That into account. But to be honest, I'm gonna just speak as from a business point of view. You appoint someone who can do the job, and there has to be more diversity in the decision making. But if someone's got the same qualification as the other, what are you gonna differentiate on then? Would it have to be race? Would it have to be something else? Or you know, if the person's good enough, then you employ them. But you know, I'm not gonna pretend and say there's no systematic racism. Of course there is, you know, or institutional racism in places. But no, I think if you're good enough for the job, you get that job. I do appreciate the diversity call for lots more managers to get into the game. But I don't think it starts from the level of clubs. I think it's got to start from coaching and our recruiters going around and asking people or asking young boys, you know, go into coaching. It'd be something for you, you know. If the demand is there, then of course, you know, make it diverse. But I think it's got to start well beneath the pyramid.
You asked me a kind of different question.
I mean, you look at
gone. You said there's a prejudice in the Premier League, but you asked me about the chairman and boards and stuff like that. I reckon definitely the board would definitely have something to do with it. You're going to have, especially in recent times, with different countries who have different views on racism and stuff like that, and have their own racial issues. Now, if they're coming from a country that has that, of course they're going to have issues with certain ethnicities. So, absolutely, like. You're ignorant to say that there isn't a board out there that has racist views and that they're not hiring these people because of their colour. But I completely agree with Cecil. It's at this time, it's people getting hired based on credentials, and it's like you said, it's not about just picking them.
I know what you're saying, but I disagree. I mean, look at the people like Lampard, Arteta,
Wayne Rooney, none of them have got any experience in anything. And yet, if we talked about medals, Ashley Cole has won more probably than all combined. He's looking for manager's job and he can't get anywhere. Yes. Yes, he is. I just think that's crazy. Sol Campbell, exactly the same, you know. And he actually had a couple of manager's jobs as well. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. But Paul Ince, you know, it goes on and on and on. And yet, they offer the job to someone like Wayne Rooney, you know. I just hit the Derby game. And whilst I kind of get that, I don't get Arteta or Lampard. Surely, I don't believe it's just credentials. I think it's if you face fits, personally.
It's a guy who's been coaching under Pep Guardiola. And he's an Arsenal legend. It's the same.
Yep.
It's the only reason why Lampard was hired, because he's a Chelsea legend. And I hope it worked out. But like you say, he didn't have any credentials. He did pretty well with Derby. He didn't get him promoted, but it didn't do enough for him to get him the Chelsea job. It was only because of his name. But
we did a podcast on this earlier. 46% win ratio he had. He didn't even have really good win ratio at Derby, Lampard.
Yeah, you are right in a sense. Like it's a difficult one. There's no definite answer to this. Exactly, but
and you can't prove it either. That's the issue.
The one answer that I completely agree with out of all of the opinions is to see always one where it's got to start from the bottom about getting young kids from different ethnicities getting these coaching badges and getting them into the game. And like, they might not want to be a footballer, but they might want to do coaching and stuff. But at the moment, it does seem to be the name rather than the credentials for a manager's role. And yeah, you are right. Lampard doesn't make sense. If Ashley Cole is out there, why is he not getting a manager's job and Lampard is? It's a tough one to answer.
So I'll give you unlimited. Well, who would you like to see West Ham buying next? That's reasonable, you know. We've got to be sensible. We just need,
it's the striker that we're missing.
I'm going to ask you the same question, DC, for QPR. On this
40 million.
40 million.
You get a tenner.
DC, you get a tenner.
I don't know. It's like, who's out there for 40 million? Like you said, the market's so broken at the moment.
You can do loan to buys. I think that's always a good option as well. I mean, we've been talking, especially me and DC yesterday, talk about how strong the championship
apparently
is.
Apparently there's a rumour, because Winston Reid, one of our defenders, has just gone to Brentford. And there's a small rumour going around that he's going to be part of a deal to get Ivan Toney in. Now, we don't know how strong that rumour is, but...
I was going to recommend him myself, to be honest.
Just say, Jay recommends Ivan Toney.
There we go. He should listen.
I think he listens
to the podcast.
Earlier, like, if you look at the kind of David Moyes system, if you compare David Moyes' prime Everton to our team at the moment, the spine of it's very, very similar. So if you look at kind of like, we'll start with the most obvious one. Suchek is obviously the Fellaini role. Antonio is your Lukaku role. And now we're getting in Lingard and possibly Benrahma as the kind of Ross Barkley role. We've got Aaron Cress role as the Leighton Baines role. So he's got that kind of same kind of Everton spine. So it's about buying players that fit that system because it works. Like, is it?
Well, how happy are you with Suchek in Lingard?
I can't really judge him just yet, but the game he had, like, you've got, like, he gave 100%. He played 90 minutes for a guy who's not played 90 minutes for however long. He fit into that squad like he'd been there all season. So based on the one game, yeah, great at the moment, but I can't judge him yet. Need to have a couple more games first, but Suchek, gone.
Do you agree? Yeah. No, I'm saying, do you agree Suchek is probably the signing of the season?
Play of the season. I reckon...
You know what I mean, play of the season.
...plaudits that he should be getting. Like, Bruno Fernandes is an amazing player. Suchek deserved player of the month in December. Like I said, there's United fans saying that Suchek got robbed. But yeah, he for us, and yeah, the sign of the season's got to be. But I was also one of those ones saying like, oh, he's going to be going to a bigger club. And I'm just like, I'm not worried about that because he's not going to fit in anyone else's system. If you look at, I was saying, like, oh, he'll go to United and stuff, but he's a CDM. When do you see, I know you see McTominay attacking, but when do you see him making late runs into the box? Same with Fred and stuff like that. When do you see another CDM in the Premier League acting like Suchek?
I 100% agree.
He's much better than his attacking ability because he's a defensive midfielder. But at the moment, that's not the case. He is much more attacking. So it'll be a mistake for someone to buy him unless you're playing that kind of football. So at the moment, I'm not worried about losing him because I don't think we will lose him because there's not a team out there that plays to his strengths. That being said, I'm sure there is a team out there who'll just buy him because of what he's doing at the moment, and then may as well ruin him. So, but
100%.
That's a completely different topic. But yeah, Suchek has been 100%. Same with Soufal. He was just a massive steal. I'm so gutted we didn't get him when he was younger. He's 28 now, but he kept Grealish in his pocket last night. It's just a good time to be a West Ham fan on the pitch at the moment. It's just a shame we can't be there.
Hopefully not continue. DC, QPR.
We are in need currently of fullbacks, but I don't think that will make or break the team, to be honest. I think, you know, striker would be really good. You know, at the minute we've got young strikers who need a bit of experience in. Charlie Austin's come in and done that. He's got 50 goals notched up for the club. Most recently scored on Monday night. But that's 50 goals in, I think it was 94 appearances. That's more than one in two. You know, you say that if you would say that about any of the Premier League strikers, you know, they'd be one of the best strikers in the world at this point. You know what I mean? So now I know he scored a bunch of those goals when he was with us in the Premier League. So that counts a little bit in his favour. But someone like that, you know, he is getting on, but he's still performing well for us. So that, I don't want to put disrespect on his name like that. But when he's gone, we need someone to come in and do the business. Everyone will want a striker. Now, what do you find £40 million striker nowadays? He'll be someone in the Championship, won't it? Like you're like Watkins and stuff like that. Yeah,
he can have League One.
Everyone wants
what
that.
What kind of striker would you want?
Oh, someone with pace. I was thinking about this the other day. We need a pacey striker. I think strikers, you know, they're very good. The best strikers in the world don't necessarily have pace, you know, like your Lewandowski's, your Kane's. But I feel a striker with pace would definitely benefit our team because we like to counter with that kind of side. So a striker that can get in behind, low centre of gravity, but also someone who's got that height as well, you know? It isn't too much to ask, isn't it? But I think it's very difficult. No, I don't know. I can't give you a name because I'm not a scout. I've not looked at these players like that. But
the same for me. I can't give you a name for the striker I want. I just can tell you what kind of striker I want. My ability to tell you about a striker is the same ability of West Ham's ability to tell about a striker, considering both of us don't have scouts.
Yes. Right, guys, we're obviously running out of time now. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners just before we wrap up here?
Hopefully, we'll be on a bit more in the next couple of weeks.
No, I was just going to say, if you made it this far, congratulations.
We do talk a lot, but
we appreciate you listening to us if you've made it this far, so well done.
Remember, guys, please stay safe. We're nearly there. We're not, actually. I totally lied. We're going to be still in lockdown for probably about 6 months. We are planning to do other topics not related to football or wrestling. So if you stay tuned, we will be talking about other subjects. But the next podcast with the D's will be regarding their world best ever 11. So please stay tuned for that. It'll be a lot more better and heated debate. So thank you very much for joining us from TM4. Have a good night. And thank you very much for joining me, Dan.
Thank you.